On this episode of Inside Boxing Live, it is a very special episode because it is episode number 200 and it is our year-end award show. We're going to break it all down the previous 12 months, take a look ahead to the future and more. Here it is. What is up, everybody? Welcome into another edition of Inside Boxing Live, a product of John Boy Media, Dan Canobio, Chris Algieri, super producer Ronnie Jerez in the corner. And today is a very special show, like I said in the open, because not only is it our year-end award show, which is my favorite award show or my favorite episode of the year, this is episode number 200 of Inside Boxing Live. And fellas, just give me a second so I can just express that feeling right there. We celebrated episode 100 last year, and I thought, wow, I never thought I'd get to 100 episodes, and it was a celebration. Today is a celebration as well, but the last 200 felt like, you know what, this is right. This show belongs. It's been a great year. It's been a great 100 shows or 200 episodes. I got to thank Chris for coming on board this past September. He's been on for about 20 episodes, and I want to thank everyone that's been with me since day one. I started this show September 2017 in the corner of my brother's office in Bellport, Long Island, on the Monday following Canelo Triple G one. I was able to interview a lot of big names. It took me to some really cool places. It took me to a whole new job at John Boy Media, and that's where Chris came on board this past September. And I have a lot of big things, or we have a lot of big things planned for the next 100 episodes, for the next year. I'm going to more fights, big content on the Inside Boxing Live YouTube page. So I want to thank everyone that's been along since day one. I know who you are, and everyone that's hopped along the ride. Thank you very much. And then I want to thank you, Chris, and I want to thank you, Ronnie, for joining the show. That is my first speech of the day. Thank you, Chris. How are you? How's everything going?
Doing great. I can thank you guys as well. This has been a lot of fun. Give me some reason to talk more about boxing. Like, I needed to do that, but apparently I did. So thanks, guys.
Well, Chris, I feel like you were a part of those 200 episodes. You were on the show, I would say, like five or six times like before you officially came up. So you were a big part of Inside Boxing Live.
That's true. Yeah. In studio and call in. So yeah, that's a good point. We had some pretty long combos, you know, prior to me joining the squad.
And Ronnie, super producer Ronnie Jerez, who we've gotten to the sport of boxing, who we've made a boxing fan, casual fan, has been along for the ride too. He's done some great stuff for us at John Boy Media. Ronnie, how are you?
I'm doing great. I can't tell you, the first time we met, you just asked me, do you know how to make a thumbnail? I said yes. I was looking for stuff to do. And we created a beautiful friendship and a great partnership here. And I've learned so much from boxing, guys. And I thoroughly enjoy every minute of it.
Yes. Ronnie just happened to be sitting in front of me that day. He was in my line of like sight. And I was like, hey, I need you to I need you to do something for me. Now he's the producer here of Inside Boxing Live. 200 episodes in the books. Thank you, everyone. Let's get into our show. I am in a tuxedo. If you're listening, you should be watching the show on Inside Boxing Live YouTube. Chris is his Hugh Hefner robe. He's got the stogie. He's got the Hefner glasses. This is a scene. We are going to do it big in 2022 year. And I can't believe it's the end of the year, Chris. Can you believe this? Can you believe we're at the end of the boxing year, the end of 2022?
No, I mean, every year goes fast, but this one seemed like it went even quicker. I mean, lots to talk about, a lot of things happened in the boxing world, a lot of things didn't happen. So that's a major headline for a lot of what we're going to talk about too. But I mean, all in, it's wild to see the year pass, but it's another good year in the annals of boxing.
Well, before we get into the awards, we have some awards. We have fans given their awards and have voted, and we have like some overall stuff. Holidays. Chris, you said you had a very special visitor come through for Christmas this year, other than family.
Yeah. My buddy Mickey Rourke stopped by. He was in Boca Raton visiting a friend who was ill for the holiday, because Mickey's that kind of guy. He's a good dude. And he just hit me up and I was like, hey, man, I don't know what you're doing today, but come on by. You know, we got
Mickey Rourke.
Mickey Rourke, the Pope of Greenwich Village himself, Randy the Ram. Well, he's been a buddy of mine for a long time. He is a huge boxing fan, obviously huge. A professional boxer himself. He's got like 9 or 10 pro fights. And he's another one. He just loves talking boxing. That's all he wants to do. So
what spending is his a Christmas on the day. Sport?
Oh, dude, he has a love affair just like you and I. I mean, it's you can't even bring up his movies. He doesn't care about Hollywood. Yeah. He doesn't want to talk about it, you know. But yeah, he's a lover of the sport just like us.
That's amazing. Mickey Rourke at the Algerie Christmas family dinner. Wow. That's pretty nuts. I just was with my nephews and no celebrities walked in the door in Long Island besides me.
I was gonna say you were there. I mean, you are.
Uncle Dan is a big deal around Manorville. Let's get into it. We have our year-end awards overall. I think it was an up and down year. I think it was like a little bit of a mixed bag, front-loaded with a ton of compelling fights. The first 6 months, you were talking about this being one of the best years in boxing history. We were getting huge fight after huge fight, compelling fights, women's boxing, which we'll get into in a little bit, had a resurgence, unification bouts, undisputed fights. The first 6 months, I was like, damn, like I had my chest out at the office. I was looking down on these MMA fans saying, this is our year. This is boxing's year. Unfortunately, still was a very good second half. But the fact that Spence Crawford and Fury Joshua both not happening in the span of like 10 days, both those fights breaking down, kind of soured the first 10 months of the year. And it left a lot of fans with a bad taste in their mouth because let's be honest, Chris, this is a what have you done for me lately type of sport. This is a week-to-week sport. And the last thing fans remember of 2022, unfortunately, is some big fights that weren't made, not the 10 months previous of fight after weekend of awesome fights.
Yeah, I mean, like you said, we had a strong front-loaded year. Rolling into September, it was like, all right, we're going to knock this thing out of the park. We have all these big fights lined up. You've got the Spence Crawford. You got the Fury Joshua. You've got Tank and Ryan Garcia. We're talking, that was a great fight. But, all these big fights were talked about but never materialized. And it's even worse when you dangle the carrot and then pull it away. You know, you shouldn't do that to dogs. You shouldn't do that to boxing fans either because it leaves people with a bad taste in their mouth.
Well, boxing fans are rabid, just like dogs. I've always said that. Yeah. Boxing fans are kind of like, I always say that they're like hockey fans. It's a niche sport, but the fans are rabid. Like the fans love the sport and they'll live and die with it. And I've said it all when the Spence Crawford fight broke down. I had a breakdown myself and I was like, you got to stop mistreating the boxing fans. You got to stop doing this, open these pay-per-views and dangling these fights. And unfortunately, this is a big part of the year, is those last two fights. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but you can't tell the story of boxing in 2022 without talking about some of the fights that didn't happen. And even if Joshua Fury, I never thought that was really going to happen. That was more of like a pipe dream. That was more Fury just going through that. Spence Crawford was a big blow. But I will say this, whenever you look ahead to 2023, which we'll also do on the show, Tank Ryan looks like it's definitely going to happen. There's big fights in January. We're getting Plant versus Benavidez. Canelo is going to come back. I do think Usyk versus Fury will happen, by March. So I'm an optimist and you know that about me, if you've been following long enough. I think 2023 is going to be huge, but you can't tell a story about 2022 without bringing up some of the fights that didn't happen. But let's talk about the fights that did happen, right, Chris? 38 absolutely. Unified fights this year. Obviously, that's with two belts on the line. 12 of those were undisputed. And this is combining men and women. So more than not, best were fighting the best. Title holders were fighting title holders. It was a very good year, all in all. Like if you look at it from start to finish.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we were, like we said, we were so excited going into the last quarter of the year. We just got let down. And like you said, exactly, in boxing, it's what have you done for me lately? So we're left with a bad taste in our mouth to finish the year. But the beginning of the year was awesome. And we couldn't keep up with it, but we had a good year nonetheless.
Yeah. So let's take a look at some overall thoughts. I think women's boxing, I think that's one of the biggest stories of 2022. Compelling fights, like 50-50 fights, fights that were meaningful, sold out arenas, most notably Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano. We were both there.
That's the thing. People are tuning in. People are tuning in now. Like that's never been a thing before. It's never, it's been gaining popularity. People are buying tickets to see women's fights, but now whole shows are women's cards and they're still selling. They're selling and people are buying and people are tuning in. People are going. And that's the biggest shift that I think we've seen in the sport in a very long time. Women sell. So that's a good thing for them. They made the biggest strides this year for sure.
Yeah. And it's good for the sport. I mean, look at UFC. It's like they're almost on even playing field as the men. I think this year was big time where we could just say, like, obviously it's still women's boxing, men's boxing, but you can almost look at it as a whole. Like, for years, we were not putting women's fights on cards because maybe the talent level wasn't there. You know, maybe it just wasn't up to the same talent as the men. But now, I mean, if you don't have a couple women's fights on your cards, like, then you're just like leaving out a whole part of your fan base. But take a look at this year. Obviously, Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano was the biggest women's fight in the history of the sport. We were there in attendance that night. It was one of the loudest I've ever heard the Garden. And I've been to a ton of Cotto fights, you two, Trinidad fights. It was a fever pitch. And that whole week felt like something different. I think when we look back years from now, we'll say that Katie Taylor versus Amanda Serrano was the tipping point for making women's boxing what it is today.
I would have to agree with you. You know, like you said, we were both there. We were in attendance. I did a watch party watching the fight live. A lot of people tuned in to watch me talk about the fight while it was happening. But, you know, it was an excellent fight all around. It was built up. They were fighting at the right time, which is a big thing that doesn't happen in the men's division quite a bit, is we got guys, they end up fighting much later in life. They have all these memes of, you know, Pacquiao and Mayweather fighting and they have a beard, you know, the gray beard, and they're doing the same thing now with Spence Crawford. But it seems like the ladies, because the talent pool is a lot smaller, we're seeing them fight each other at the right time. They're fighting each other in their primes. And that's really what the sport needs, any sport needs. That's where the men's division is really failing us as fans. But yeah, that fight, not only did it happen at the right time, the lead up was great, but the fight delivered. The fight was actually awesome. It was a really good, entertaining fight. It was a super, super close fight. Ultimately, I think the right person won the fight based on scoring. But man, what an event, because that's more than a fight.
Yeah, and then we had a few months later, we had Clarissa Shields with her big win over Savannah Marshall. We had Alicia Bumgarner, Michaela Mayer. We had Natasha Jonas, who had a phenomenal year. You know, younger fighters like Ellie Scottney and Sky Nicholson, who's a friend of the show. Like, for the first time in a long time, I think we can have separate awards, and we'll have that on the show. It's like, for a while, they never got any recognition at the end of the year, women's boxing. We never had a prospect of the year. We never had a fight of the year, never had a fighter. It kind of just was like, oh, yeah, that was a pretty good fight. But I think that the maybe 2019, 2020, or maybe when Shields came onto the scene, it started slowly, slowly matriculating. And then 2022, it just exploded, and I expect for it to keep on going. So that was a big story of the year in 2022, was women's boxing. What do you think was the best division in boxing in 2022? If you got to kind of consider talent fighting each other, talent in the division, young and old, what do you think was the best division?
Man, that's a really good question. You know, that's a real tough one. I'm trying to think about the guys fighting each other.
But we know two divisions that it's not, like 147 and 160, which for years was the best divisions in boxing, were a barren wasteland this year. Crawford and Spence fought once this year. They didn't fight each other. We didn't see any of the young guys make any real big strides like Virgil Ortiz or Boots Ennis. 160 is an absolute
160
joke.
Dead. Dead. That's a wasteland. There's nothing there. I'm going to say one that people might really think about, 175. You know, I like the fact that the top guys are fighting. You know, Bivol with his breakout win against Canelo, obviously huge upset. And then he goes on and he beats up Zerto, hands him his first loss emphatically, easily even, is pretty impressive. Then you've got Beterbiev, who is an absolute monster, taking on a very, very dangerous Joe Smith, who I think a lot of people were picking, hey, you know, Joe could get him, and Beterbiev absolutely destroys him. You know, former world champion, Joe has never been stopped. Joe's never been down like that. So, I mean, we've got top level guys fighting each other. Once that fight happens, which I hope it does happen, and, you know, optimism, Dan, I hope that you believe it will. Pessimistic Chris thinks not, but 75 is, would be one of the front runners for me. I love 35 because it's so talent rich. There's too much moving around. There's, you know, Tank is fighting at 30, 35, 40, you know, he's all over the place. Obviously the Ukrainian situation really muddled the waters because Lomachenko was out for so long. So a couple of things I think keep 135 out, but man, I love the talent there. All those guys who are buzzing around 135. And I don't think they're afraid to fight each other either. Those guys are all willing to get in there and do it. So that's on there as well.
Yeah, I think 135 and 140, those two divisions have the most talent, hands down. It's like 20 deep if you combine them all. And I think we'll see Haney fight Lomachenko in 2023. I think Shakur Stevenson is looking for big names. Obviously, Tank and Ryan, and Ryan moves up to 140. Who knows what Tank will do? He might be able to become the guy at 135 if Haney moves up to 140. There's no doubt about it. That's like the most talent in all of boxing. Well,
then
right
you got Shakur. Shakur's
Shakur
right there,
is looking for a name. He's getting, you know, Isaac Cruz is ducking him. You know, he might be fighting Kambosos. So I predicted a few months back that would be a perfect fight for Shakur if he can't get any of these big names that he wants. But I think Shakur, like I predicted last year's show, that he would have a breakout year, and he pretty much did. That wasn't that big of a prediction. But I think he wants to have an even bigger year next year. But I think the politics of boxing kind of has to wait his turn a little bit once he goes to 135. Like, he wants the big smoke. He wants the smoke. But none of these other guys want it just yet. So I think Shakur, by the end of the year, could be that guy. But I think the best division in boxing in 2022 was Superfly. Again, we saw Chocolatito fight Julio Cesar Martinez. Then we saw him fight Estrada. We saw Bam Rodriguez take out legend after legend, Rung Vasai and Quadras. Ioka and Franco are still fighting this year on New Year's Eve in Japan. Fernando Martinez had a huge year. He had broke a lot of records, CompuBox records this year when he fought Jerwin and Cajas. It's the best division. I don't think it will be the best division for much longer because a lot of these guys are getting older. And Bam Rodriguez has left the division. But once again, Superfly delivered this year. I think it had the best year of any weight class.
That's a great choice. I mean, we gush over Bam all the time and how fantastic he is. You know, him moving, like I agree that that's not going to last for long. That never can or never would. But you know, having that division be that strong, like those guys are getting older, Bam's moving down. You know, then you got the monster in a way, just a few pounds away. So yeah, that's a great pick.
I think that there's a lot of talent in boxing right now at every division. The fans are able to watch more boxing than they ever had. Like I did illustrate that we are seeing a lot of best versus best, maybe not getting every single best versus best scenario, but you can't deny that we're living in the golden era of watching boxing, whether it's DAZN stream, whether it's ESPN Plus, whether it's Showtime, whether it's Fox, not so much, whether it's ESPN. There's no doubt about it. You can watch a clear stream. I watched a fight last week in my brother's car, the back seat, in DAZN, on DAZN, on my phone, sitting there. Like 5 years ago, we never would have thought that would happen. So there are some positives of the year. I know we're always talking about the negatives, but like there.
Yeah, but I'm gonna give some pushback on that one because I think there's always been talent, and I think I agree with what you're saying. Like it wasn't available. We weren't able to see it. Like all those lighter weights, you know, guys like Ricardo Finito Lopez, who always, you know, kept those lighter weights. Those are like, wow, amazing. The Flushing Flash, you know, those kind of guys that we never really saw much of. They were super talented. We never saw them because the American fans, there wasn't a passion for it like there is now.
Yeah.
But also because there's so much boxing out there, I think we're seeing some fights that don't deserve to be on TV.
Well, that's true.
A lot of these undercard bouts, these complete mismatches with the A-side versus Joe Schmo. I don't want to see those guys fight. I used to always say, coming up, if you see a guy on TV, he's good. He deserves to be there. There's a reason that they're there. That isn't the case anymore. Some of these long cards where we have Facebook Live, and we're seeing fights that just should not be on TV and are actually bad for the sport. Nobody wants to see, you know, the Olympian come knock out some taxi cab driver. We don't need to see
that. Yeah, I'm thinking of Richard.
It's an unfortunate part of the sport, but yeah, exactly. That was absolutely brutal. Did not think it to be. We don't want to see that kid's face on national television. So yeah, there's good and there's bad because of all the boxing that we could possibly see. And I remember, like, when I was younger, maybe like tough man contests are on. I'd still watch it. You know,
yeah,
I'd turn
exactly.
it on. Be like,
we're gonna watch
it's a fight. I'm still gonna watch it. But that's just the nature of fight sports.
Well, it's a catch-22. It's like there's a catch-22 to everything. Like, yes, we are getting a lot of sport, and I just mentioned all the different platforms on different networks there are in boxing. Mm-hmm. But I feel like that's what's holding up the biggest fights from happening, is that these promoters are in partnership with the networks. Like, Top Rank is in partnership with ESPN. ESPN tells Top Rank, you have to give us 12 dates this year. So therefore, ESPN or Top Rank is going to have to spread out their entire stable to fulfill their minimum obligation, which is like 10 or 12 shows a year. That's why we're seeing Tank. That's why we're seeing Haney and Lomachenko. Like, oh, let's do it in May. because we don't want to do it in April, and then who knows what we'll have coming down the pipeline. That's the biggest thing I think that's stopping biggest fights from happening. It's not really that crazy of a declaration, but you can see it. Like, it's these networks are beholden to their promoters and vice versa, and it's stopping the biggest fights from happening because they have to fit a certain amount of fights in 1 year.
That's a great insight into inside boxing there, Dan, because I think a lot of people have no idea that kind of stuff is an issue.
Yeah, and also, like you said, like seeing too many fighters on TV. It's like, we come from the HBO era where there was, what, two or three fights on the main card, three sometimes, usually two or three, and you almost belong. Like, it was like, you made it to HBO, like two fights. That's huge. That's a big time thing. And then you had the Friday night fight feeder system.
Well, I was going to say, think about ESPN Friday night fights. Those were like, they weren't the best guys in the world, but God damn, those guys all could fight. And they all deserve to be there. And they put on some of the best fights that you could ever see in the 90s and the 2000s. I mean, my God, I do miss that a lot, though. I miss ESPN Friday night fights. Not going to lie.
Good year altogether. Let's get into our awards. Here we go. It's why we're here. Everyone gets this very prestigious gold award, not plastic. This is real, real gold. We'll start it off with moment of the year. I will give mine first. I'm going with the entire month of April. This was a month that featured a ton of stars, a ton of fights. It got boxing fans excited, and it reminds me of what this sport could be if everything went right. And I still think it can go right, even with the dearth of networks and platforms like we just talked about. We saw Golovkin fight Murata in April. We saw Ryan Garcia in action. We saw Lubin and Fundora, which is up for fight of the year. We saw Spence and Ugas. We saw Fury and White, Stevenson and Valdez, and then Taylor and Serrano. Those all happened on consecutive weeks in April. It was a very big moment for the sport. I think every month could be like that. But my moment of the year, there's a lot of big moments this year, but my moment of the year is an entire month of April. Chris, what is yours?
I'm going with the appearance, the grand arrival of Dimitri Bivol. His defeat of Canelo Alvarez was, I mean, so many people were so struck that night. I was in the arena, and I was working the undercard for DAZN, and I had so many people. They were interviewing me on DAZN and asking me if Bivol had a chance. I'm like, yeah, he's got a very good chance. He's a terrible style matchup for Canelo. He's big, he's good, he's young. This isn't Sergey Kovalev. Yes, it's 175 again. Yes, he knocked out Kovalev. This is not Sergey Kovalev. This is a whole different guy in terms of age, hunger, motivation, skill level. Totally different guy. And sure enough, he gets the upset. People are flabbergasted. I was not. And it brought Bivol to the world stage, which I think he really deserved because he is phenomenal. I've seen him up close for many, many years now. And, it switched up the whole pound for pound discussion.
That's good.
And I think that's a massive deal. Changes the whole year. Everyone was, everyone pretty much had Canelo at the top. I did as well. Now with a loss at the time, a pretty much unknown Bivol, it really shook up the world rankings. And I think that's a huge event to start in the first half of that year.
Yeah, good one, Chris. That's an awesome one. Our fan vote, which I want to thank everyone for voting. This is an awesome aspect of our awards. It's the first time I've ever done this. Very tight race here, moment of the year from the fans. 40.3% are agree with you, Chris, having Bivol upsetting Canelo as their moment of the year, but outdone by Taylor versus Serrano, which got 41.2%. So,
super close.
Yeah, very close. The tightest race. So, Taylor Serrano was the Inside Boxing Live fan choice for moment of the year. Can't go wrong with Bivol upsetting Canelo. Can't go wrong with Taylor and Serrano. I put Crawford's Instagram live as part of the votes when he explained why his fence fight didn't happen. Joshua's post fight speech got 11%. You were on the call for that one. Hip, hip, hooray three times, and then taking the flag and the belt of Usyk. That was a weird moment, for sure. Strange. Give me thoughts on that, Chris.
I was live on the call, so it was myself and Chris Mannix and Corey Urban calling that fight.
I remember you said something like, that was weird.
Well, Chris Mannix said that was bizarre, and I was like, that was very, something like that. But yeah, it was a candid moment for sure, because it was jarring. It was jarring, I should say. That's generally why fighters aren't allowed to grab mics. You're supposed to hold the mic, make sure that they don't walk off with it. But Hey, it made for something for us to talk about.
Super producer Ronnie Jerez, do you have a moment of the year besides joining our show?
That you just took it, yeah. Joining, no. In boxing, I was kind of thinking about it. I was just gonna say any Inoue knockout is a moment of the year.
Yeah. Yes, anytime Inoue steps in the ring, 6 a.m. Those are my moments. Anytime he, what about when he came in with that the electric guitar guy in the ring?
That's the one. That's the moment of the year for me.
There it is, right there. That was, I just got chills in my tuxedo thinking about that guy on the electric guitar. His electric guitar riff lasted longer than the fight. Poor Marito Donaire, who got absolutely iced. All right, we're one award down. Let's move over to trainer of the year. I think this is an easy one. I'm going with Derek James. He's the guy. I mean, if he doesn't win this unanimously, then there's something wrong. He's got Jermell Charlo, who became undisputed. He obviously has Errol Spence, who unified belts. He's got Frank Martin, who had probably, if we had a breakthrough performer of the year, he'd probably be it. And he's got a ton of other young fighters coming up in that Dallas area. This is a guy that should have won this award in years past. A very soft-spoken guy, but a very powerful trainer in the business. A lot of great trainers in the boxing world. Derek James is my trainer of the year for 2022.
Same. Not much more to say. I mean, he's got such a deep stable of, you know, up-and-coming guys, of guys who are breaking out, guys who've been there, guys who are unifying. So, yeah. And he might have Anthony Joshua soon. So, add that to the list.
Yeah. Fan vote. This was probably the widest one, or one of the widest ones. 64% of the fans chose Derek James. I always said we have the smartest fans, smartest community. 16% Sugar Hill Stewart, who did a good job with Tyson Fury, even though Tyson Fury had a pretty quiet year, as even though he sold out massive stadiums. We'll get to that later on. So that is our trainer of the year. That was a good one. Let's go over to let's get into the women's side of things. Let's go to women's fight of the year. Talk about a wide, wide one. This one was pretty easy. My choice is Amanda Serrano versus Katie Taylor. We talked about it just before. It was a huge event. It was a very important event, and the fight lived up to the hype. I was on my feet inside the garden, even though you're not supposed to do that in the press area. I don't care. I was clapping. I was going nuts. I looked over to my right, and I see Ryan Garcia shadow boxing. Look over to my left, I see Jake Paul and Eddie Hearn going at it. Fans rabid. It was one of the coolest fight atmospheres I've ever been a part of, and I can't talk about it enough, because after this year, we probably can't talk about it anymore, because that's how boxing works. But that's my fight of the year for the women's side, Taylor versus Serrano. Chris?
Yeah, there's no discussion here. The fight was fantastic. It was the biggest fight that could have been made. It got made, and it was good. So the other you know, big women's fights this year, the Clarissa and Savannah Marshall, that was an important matchup. Really, really great fight. Really great matchup. Fight was okay. You know, it was a decent scrap.
Yeah.
And then you got Mayer and Baumgartner, bad blood, awesome lead up. Fight was okay. Taylor and Serrano actually lived up to everything going up to it. They were respectful on the way up, but man, when it came down to it, they were trying to knock each other's heads off, and that's what boxing is all about.
Well, I think that just shows that the health of women's boxing, where not every event has to be this historic, you know, like, oh, let's keep celebrating women's boxing. It's got to get to the point where it's looked at as the same as men's. Like, let's have a good card. And I thought Meyer Baumgartner and Shields Marshall was its first ever all women's card, and it broke all sorts of viewership records and all that. But you know, it doesn't have to be overhyped to what it was. Like you said, there were good fights, they were fun to watch, but they weren't exceptional, and that's fine.
Right.
That just shows you that we're seeing more parity in the sport, we're seeing more talent, and we're seeing maybe in more of an even playing field, where in years past, you know, it was so many empty weight classes, and Shields was winning, you know, all over every weight class, you know, winning all these sorts of titles. So that was good, I think.
Yeah, I agree.
All right, let's move on to women's fighter. This one could go a couple different ways. I'm picking Katie Taylor. Even though on fight night, I thought Serrano might have won, but I think I got caught up in the hysteria of the night when I rewatched it. I thought Katie Taylor won. If you win the biggest fight of the year in women's boxing, then you should be the fighter of the year for women. Chris, what do you got?
I got Katie Taylor as well. I think that she is so good for the sport. She's a breath of fresh air. She fights hard. I've always thought her fights are entertaining, even the ones that go the, you know, she usually does go the distance, but she throws a ton of punches. She's very technically sound. You know, she's not a big with the talking. She's not going to build the fight in that way, but she's going to make for a good fight. That's a fan friendly fight. And she's willing to fight everybody. You know, she has, and she will. So that's a big part of being the fighter of the year. I would have Clarissa Shields right behind her. I think Clarissa has been, you know, obviously extremely, extremely dominant. She talks the talk, she fights the fight, but it's just different in those higher weight classes. I think for the women, it's not as competitive, although Savannah Marshall was someone that I thought that was going to be very competitive, and it was. Mm-hmm. But Katie Taylor's fighting legitimate studettes throughout these divisions over the years. So I've got to give it to her once again, fighter of the year.
Yeah, fan vote, 43.7% have Katie Taylor. 28% in second is Clarissa Shields. 22% had Alicia Bumgardner. Natasha Jonas finished in fourth. And in 2023, I'm just thinking right now, we could see all these ladies run it back. I think Shields and Marshall, they've activated their rematch clause, even though I thought Shields won pretty convincingly, but I don't mind seeing that one again. Bumgarner and
especially
Maya,
the lead up to that, they were getting after each other. I like that stuff. Dude, the women are good at that. They're selling the fights really well because they get they really get nasty at the press conferences and on social media. So I like that stuff.
Especially Meyer and Bumgarner. If we had beef of the year, 100% would be them. Mayer cannot let it go. She's, you know, she's calling for a rematch. Bumgarner, I think, is going to be fighting for Undisputed in early 2023. I wouldn't be surprised if Meyer and Bumgarner run it back. And then also the big one, Katie Taylor and Amanda Serrano. There's talk of doing it in Ireland at Croke Park in front of 80,000. We've talked about this on the show. I thought that there's no way Serrano would do that. But, you know, her team is saying they're willing to do it. 80,000 or whatever, close to that. We could see three huge rematches in 2023. I usually don't like rematches, but some of these warrant them. So women's boxing, man, I couldn't say enough good things. That's the our women's side of things for our award show. Let's go over to let's go promoter. Promoter of the year. Kind of goes in unison with our network of the year, but my promoter of the year was Top Rank this year. I thought they had a very strong year. Haney Kambosos twice. One of those was an undisputed, both of them were undisputed fights on regular ESPN. Fury White, Fury Chisora, Shakur versus Valdez, Shields versus Marshall, Bumgarner versus Meyer. Inoue fought twice on ESPN Plus. Teofimo Lopez fought twice. Not to mention all of the young talent that they have, not to mention some of these other fights. Better BF Smith was on regular ESPN. ESPN had an awesome year. It's free. Well, if you have ESPN Plus, most people do. Barely any of these fights, I don't think any of these fights were on on pay-per-view. So ESPN is my network of the year, Chris.
Oh, we're doing network of the year. Yeah, I'm going to go with ESPN as well. And, you know, I work for both companies, ESPN and DAZN.
Company man over here.
Yeah, I'm not speaking badly about anybody. But I'm going with ESPN. Their consistency is really what I love about them and what they're able to do for the sport and for the fans in general. And DAZN, man, you're showing too many of these YouTubers. That's my argument. I can't have you win Network of the Year because I don't want to watch these YouTubers slap each other around on pay-per-view. So ESPN's got it.
They have a whole DAZN has a whole like league. They have their own like outfit of DAZN. YouTubers, I like to see the numbers. I think it's somewhat popular, and I think it's doing well. Like January 14th, KSI is fighting Dylan Danis.
Who cares?
That is just.
I know these kids care, but I don't care. Fight fans don't care. They should make DAZN Jr. and put these shows
like Nickelodeon Jr.
Yeah, exactly. It's for the kids.
Mm. Yeah, fan vote. The fans like DAZN. 41% chose DAZN. 36% chose ESPN. 20% showed Showtime. It's interesting. Showtime always has good years. I think they're the most consistent. I think they have the best broadcast. Everyone had a pretty good showing this year. I thought, like I said, like this is the golden era of watching boxing. Showtime had a lot of pay-per-views. Almost all their big fights were pay-per-views outside of Charlo Castaño, which was regular Showtime. ESPN, like we just said, didn't have any pay-per-views. DAZN, you pay the subscription, but the subscription keeps on rising. I think it's up to $200 a year now. Last year, I think it was $100. I remember when it was $10 a month. So things are changing. But I think all the networks had a pretty good showing. But in my opinion, ESPN edged it out just because they give you a lot of quality and it was on regular ESPN. So it was a good year for them. Promoter of the year. If I'm choosing ESPN as network, then I'm going to go with promoter. They're kind of married. They're kind of in bed together. Top Rank is my promoter of the year. And then for all pretty much all the same reasons as I just named, are you going to go with Top Rank too?
Yeah, I love me some Top Rank. I mean, we all know that. That's my family over there. So I got Top Rank. Old Top Rank always does it. I mean, Bob Arum wrote the book on promoting for boxing. So how can you not be promoter of the year?
Fan vote was very close. This is the closest one by far. 42%, 42.6 have Match Room. 41.7 mm-hmm. have Top Rank. Coming in third, PBC with 13%. Interesting. I thought Matchroom had a very good year, too. They put on fights globally. Oh, yeah. Like, they're a global force. You know, doing fights overseas, Saudi Arabia, whatever your thoughts on that. All over the place. They have a whole series in Europe. They're putting on, obviously, big fights in the UK. They're putting on not as many fights here in the U.S., but they still did some significant fights here in the U.S. Chocolatito and Estrada comes to mind. Canelo, B-Ball as well. But they are a, I would say, global outfit. Top Rank also, too, doing those fights in the UK with Fury and Japan with Inoue. I think Matchroom had a strong year. They all had pretty much strong years, but let's see where it continues to go.
That's one of my gripe, but one of the reasons I wouldn't have Matchroom at the top is because the U.S. fights. They're just in, it seems like there's been less and less U.S. fights, where maybe in 2001 there was a lot more of Matchroom USA, and it seems like it's going a little more towards back to Europe.
All right, let's go into saga of the year. There's a lot of sagas in the boxing world. Unfortunately, too many, in my opinion. There were some good ones this year. What did I put for saga of the year? I got to check my. Oh, yeah, I put Conor Benn's failed PED tests. Something that we talked about a lot on this show. Something that we covered beautifully. It was our most watched show of 2022, was when Chris educated the entire world on PEDs and boxing. Obviously it hit home close to you, but it was a big saga. There is no doubt that this left a stain, but also it was a learning moment. I think that a lot of fighters are going to think twice now before they go and do this, because Conor Benn's career, I think, is over. His reputation gone. You're going to think twice now before you do those cocktails that you spoke of. It's still going on. This is a saga that's still going on. Benn put out statements. It's his wife's putting out statements. It's all rubbish to me, because how did you fail two tests? You can say you're innocent. You can cry that, you know, you're being wronged. How did you fail two tests? This is still the saga of the year for me. It's ongoing. It's unfortunate, but I think there's learning from it. And I think that we handled it so like perfectly. Most notably you, Chris, who educated a lot of fans out there and media and fighters on how prevalent some of these PEDs are in the sport.
Yeah, I think that's really the big thing, elucidating the fact that this is going on, and it's not as foreign or in the past as we may think. It's still prevalent, still going on. Tests are easier to beat than people think, and that's just a harsh reality of it. And it's always been an arms race: who can make the better designer drug that will pass the tests? Because there's not really anyone out there trying to get the better test that's going to find the designer drug. There's no money in that. The money is in the drugs that can beat the test, not the other way around. So that's tough. But for me, though, my saga of the year is Spence Crawford, because it's as close to home as the Conor Benn situation landed, because of the Peds and that big fight that I was actually very excited for not happening. I was way more excited for Spence Crawford, and I'm still excited for that fight. And I think that dangled carrot is hard to swallow at this point, because we were so close and it seemed like it was happening. And I remember I said it in front of Mannix when we were on air. I'm like, he goes, "You still think a fight's going to happen one day?" I'm like, I mean, I would hope it happened one day. He goes, "Jesus, nah, it's not happening." And I was like, "Nah, man, I was being optimistic Dan for a moment there." And then it got pulled out from underneath us once again. And another year passes and these guys haven't fought. And it's we're looking at a Pacquiao Mayweather situation. So that one really, really burns me up. So that's going to be my saga of the year.
When I did the show last year, my year in the workshop, I said, if Spence Crawford doesn't happen in 2022, boxing has failed. Like, Spence has failed. Crawford has failed. That fight broke me. Like, I recorded a raw reaction. And I was like, I have nothing positive. There's no spin on this. Everyone is to blame. Got a lot of flack for that. Obviously, the more we heard about this, the more it seemed like Crawford didn't exactly negotiate in good faith. They're talking about running back the negotiations. Fans do not care anymore. You can't mistreat fans over and over the obviously we'll all watch. I think it's already past its prime, and especially now with Spence getting into another car accident and him saying that I want to fight again before Crawford. So we're looking at December. It's getting into an area where I thought maybe he could do 600,000-700,000 buys. I think it's going to do under that. I don't think they're going to make as much money as they think. That is definitely saga of the year in the fans' minds. 50% of the vote. 14% was the Hearn-Ellerbe beef. Those two went at it for a while. You know, my moment of the year could have been, you know, my handshake with Leonard Ellerbe and the Hall of Fame in Canastota. What a place to make amends, me and Leonard Ellerbe. Haven't heard much from Leonard on the Twitter machine, but I hope he's doing well. Saga of the year, according to the fans, is Spence Crawford not happening. All right, let's keep it moving here. We've done moment, we've done trainer. We got to get into the big ones now. We've done saga. We got to get into the big ones, Chris. And let's get into our knockout of the year. Some good knockouts this year. Some powerful knockouts. Some big ones. All the way from heavyweight, all the way down to the lower weights. But in my opinion, there was none more shocking and there was none more cleaner, none more unpredictable than Joe Cardona icing Ogawa to win a world title. No one, I picked Ogawa to win this fight. Cardona was not much of a puncher. Second round just lays him out. Crowd going absolutely berserk. Bawazzi or on the apron. You got Eddie Hearn going nuts in the ring. And then they hugged after. I just, for some reason, that one really resonated with me. I know a lot of the fans didn't agree, but for me, Joe Cardona KOing Ogawa is my knockout of the year. How about you?
Yeah, I had Ogawa winning that fight too going into it, and it was and thoroughly shocked with the way that he was able to ice in the way he did. A beautiful step in 1-2. You couldn't land a better punch and just put Ogawa away with it. What a perfect, beautiful one punch knockout. That's what knockout should be. But for me, knockout of the year, I like drama. So I got Wood over Common. I mean, the back and forth.
Any more drama than that?
Oh, you cannot get more drama than that. The fight was awesome. And also unexpected. That was an unexpected good, great fight. For going into the fight, would you expect that to be the type of fight that we're gonna be talking about now?
No,
probably not. So and then for it to unfold the way it did, Conlon with the early knockdown, and then Wood coming back and putting him away in the fashion that he did. I mean, geez, that I like the buildup, the slow build. This shocking knockout early on, those are always great. But I love a fight. A slugfest, a fight, a back and forth, and then it ends in knockout. So for knockout of the year, I got that.
Yeah, fans or listeners, 33% of you picked Wood over Conlon. I finished second. First at 37%, excuse me, was Caleb Plant knocking out Durrell. And then doing
awesome knockout too. Oh, yeah, there was a lot, yeah.
The digging, the thing that went super viral on Twitter and social media. That was a sick knock. Another one that you didn't really see coming because Plant's not really known as a knockout puncher. No. Durrell, tough.
And Durrell's
durable.
Tough and durrable. Yeah.
Yeah. Obviously, Wood Conlon was a huge one. But fans like Plant.
Even the Wilder Hellenius, though.
Yeah.
For one punch shot. Last.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that knockout. I was excited. I was like, hey, this is why we tune into Wilder, because he could do that. Because that's one thing Hellenius has shown, especially recently. He's been a solid heavyweight prospect. And for him to get iced in one round like that, I was like, wow, man, Wilder's still that guy.
Yeah, that was a big moment at the Barclays Center. Let's go to fight of the year for the men. I'm going to go with Wood and Conlon. That's why I didn't really say much after your knockout, because I wanted to save the floor for that. The stakes, world title on the line. The stage, two rabid fan bases. They actually had to separate the fans in terms of sections, cheering sections, something they do in soccer. I haven't heard much about that in the boxing world. They had the Irish on one side, and then they had the UK fans on the other. It was a rabid fan base. It was a huge stage, and it delivered, man. That was a rocky script right there. Conlon knocking down Wood early. Conlon, not known as a knockout puncher, his first world title fight, really wanted that. And then you had Lee Wood fighting his way back into the fight. And then that 12th round was stuff of legends. I mean, Conlon getting knocked out of the ring flush and then landing in his dad's arms
if you give that script to Hollywood, they'd say, no, that's ridiculous. That's so over the top. But that's what happened in this fight. And a personal note, first fight I ever watched, I would say made my girlfriend watch, was Wood Conlon. We watched it live on the TV, nonetheless. And I didn't have to watch it on my phone. I pulled it up on her TV. That's how big it was. And she was like stunned by it. And she's like, are all fights like this? I was like, absolutely not.
No.
Ever. Like,
no.
It was a crazy scene. That's my fight of the year, Wood Conlon.
Well, I feel bad for your girlfriend. She's going to be chasing that dragon for the rest of her fan time as a boxing fan. Right. But yeah, no, I mean, everything I said for the knockout of the year is the reason why this is the fight of the year for me. Everything, all of that. I mean, everything you said it perfectly. So yeah, Wood Conlon, fight of the year.
Yeah, fans agree. 46% of our listeners chose Wood versus Conlon. 28% chose Fundor versus Lubin. Which you can't go wrong with that one too. This happens all the time with the boxing fans. It's like, wait, what about Fedor Lubin? Like, how can you not pick that one? You know, there was a bigger stakes. It was no disrespect by any means. Like, I just thought Wood Conlon had more dramatics. Fedor Lubin was insane.
Awesome fight.
Back and forth. Both fighters touching the canvas, which always makes for I think that's almost the criteria in my opinion for fight of the year. Last year I had Wilder versus Fury 3 as my fight of the year. Both guys hit the canvas in that one. Both guys hit the canvas in Fundora Lubin. Both guys hit the canvas in Wood Conlon. You can't go wrong with any of those two. Charlo Castaño finished with 18%, which was a good fight.
I like that fight a lot.
It was a good fight. I thought it wasn't like as back and forth as I thought it was going to be. I think Charlo obviously made it not back and forth. He kind of from like the fifth or sixth round on, showed that he was the better fighter that night, but still a pretty good fight. But so a lot of good fights this year, but obviously the fans and all of us agree here that Wood Conlon was the fight of the year. Last one, did the best for last, fighter of the year.
No, we missed prospect of the year.
We missed the prospect of the year. That's why, Chris, we have you here. Prospect of the year. I think I went with Diego Pacheco. I know this is not going to be a popular thought. I think he has the most upside. I like how fluid he is. I like how powerful he is. I think he's 18 or under 22 years old. Could be 21. I know he's 21-0, I think. And he's got a lot of knockouts, and he's got a good promoter. Diego Pacheco is my prospect. How about you, Chris?
Great pick. Love that kid. Really love that kid. I've called a number of his fights coming up. Impresses every time out and is getting better all the time. Keyshawn Davis, another kid that I really, really like. There's a huge upside. Bruce Carrington came out of left field to put on some ridiculous knockouts this year and has been getting better every fight as well. But I'm going Jared Anderson because I think he made the biggest step of any of the prospects on the list, prospects that have fought this year. Also, Xander Zayas, I don't want to forget him. He has been a tremendous prospect.
I don't know if Zayas won the award before, like consensus. He won it last year. I think he's no longer a candidate, or he would have won it again.
Okay. Well, I got Jared Anderson. I think that winner of Forrest was huge because Forrest gives top contenders hell. And for Jared Anderson to put him away the way that he did is really, really eye-opening to his ultimate potential, his ceiling, which almost seems like there is none. So I'm going prospect of the year with Jared Anderson.
Yeah, Jared Anderson, did he win? According to our fan vote, Keyshawn Davis got 39% of the vote. Jared Anderson finished right behind him, 36%. Diego Pacheco got 22%. I love this fan voting. It's nice and close. It's not like too all over the place.
They know. You say we have the smartest fans around, and they know. And for one, they're tuning in because they're smart, because they know that we've got the goods. But they also know what they're doing when it comes to these voting these votes.
You can't go wrong. Keyshawn Davis, I think, is going to be a world title winner multiple
next year.
Next year.
He's winning title next year. Yeah.
He's going to be moved fast. Former Olympian. He's going to be moved just like Teofimo did, just like Lomachenko did.
He might jump over contender. He might go right from prospect to world champion. He is that good and that far along.
Jared Anderson, I think, cemented the award, even though I didn't pick him. But I think, he made a huge statement when he took out Jerry Forrest in the way he did. 13-0, 13 knockouts, American heavyweight. He won't be
if he wasn't out of the ring because of the injury, he would have been easily prospect of fear without question, probably of everybody, because he didn't fight often this year.
I see Davis and Anderson making huge pushes in 2023. Maybe Anderson more than Davis because of the heavyweight division, and you know, it's kind of wide open, and he's an American, and he's got ESPN behind him in Top Rank. So I think Jared Anderson won't be on the prospect list next year. You know, Bob Arum is saying like at the end of 2024, he'll be ready to fight Tyson Fury. That's interesting to me.
If Tyson's fighting at that point.
But. Well, yeah, we can talk about that. Could be a big storyline of this year is like Tyson Fury's antics. And I'm like just so tired of him by now, like retired. Not, I want to fight. Now he says he wants to fight David Haye and David Price. Like, come on, bro. What are we doing here?
Why?
I don't know. Let's get to fight of the year. Fighter of the year. Easy pick for me. We've talked about this on the show numerous times. I'm going with Dmitry Bivol. This is a guy who defeated the pound-for-pound number one fighter in the world. And yes, it was an upset. There weren't many people picking Dmitry Bivol to win that fight. And he did it with relative ease against Canelo. He followed that up by defeating an undefeated top five light heavyweight in Zerto Ramirez. I don't want to hear this revisionist history that Zerto was a bum. Zerto was a top five light heavyweight who was undefeated, huge guy, a lot of skills, and he defeated him very easily. 24 rounds Dmitry Bivol fought in 2022. He outlanded those two opponents in 20 of the 24 rounds. Unbelievable year for Dmitry Bivol. He is my 2022 fighter of the year.
Yeah, I mean, I mentioned that I thought that was the moment of the year, him defeating Canelo, him coming onto the world stage, him doing what he does. I know you're the numbers guy, so the numbers for him, forget it. You know, I had said earlier in the year, my guy Bam Rodriguez.
You're going with Bam, aren't you?
I'm pushing for it so hard. But honestly, I mean, if it comes down to the award, it's got to go to Bivol. You know, he's the bigger guy. He beat the current top pound for pound guy. And that's it. And then he followed up with another victory. I know that Bam had three wins this year. I know that he beat, you know, Rungvisai, who's an absolute legend and a super tough guy, but he's not Canelo Alvarez. Right. You know, he beat Quadras on 2 weeks notice, which is crazy. He jumped up two weight classes to become first world title, world champion. That's awesome too. You know, his third fight was less memorable, which
still good fight.
I don't care. He was still a good fight and he was still busy. And then he says, I'm going back down away. Like that's awesome. Like that's very cool. So he's in my heart, my fighter of the year. But when it comes down to nuts and bolts and on paper, it's gotta be Bivol.
65% of the Inside Boxing Live listeners chose Dmitry Bivol. I think we're all on agreement there. 21% Bam Rodriguez. Usyk got some votes. And so did Devin Haney. Devin Haney had a really good year. I think he gets a little, I don't know what the right word is, but the fight that he fought Kambosos twice, he came undisputed, which is unbelievable achievement. But yep, the way he did it, just like pretty much blanking Kambosos, maybe won like 22 of the 24 rounds. It's hard to give him fighter of the year, but he had an awesome year and he took his career and into his own hands. You know, he changed promoters, changed networks, took whatever less money, and I'll fly to Australia twice. And now he's in the driver's seat in negotiations with Lomachenko. Love that. Can't go wrong with Usyk, who once again, virtuoso performance, beating Anthony Joshua and improved Anthony Joshua. Can't go wrong with Jermell Charlo. He only fought once too. He became undisputed at 154, beating Castaño. But and Bam, like you said, Bam's year. But I just think Bivol. I think he became like a household name for boxing fans, always was a good fighter. And now he's just like, wow, this guy's really good. And for the next 3 or 4 years, he should be in some really good fights.
Something we didn't mention about Charlo, you know, his win over Castaño, they fought to a really, really tough draw the first fight, which easily could have gone to Castaño. So you got to pull that weighted wise into that win, you know, and that's why I said that was such an important fight for me, because he made the technical adjustments and was able to really take control of someone that was giving him hell the first fight. So we got to keep that in mind too for people who may have forgot that was a rematch.
Ronnie, do you have a fighter of the year, sir?
Inoue.
Well, he's an Inoue guy. He's an Inoue guy.
That's it. If you come into the sport late the way that Ronnie has, I mean, Inoue's
can't go wrong. Inoue's
he's the guy.
He could be looked at as the best pound for pound fighter in the world. I don't do pound for pound lists, but if I did, he would be near the top. Like any of these guys, Bivol, Usyk, Inoue, Canelo, Crawford, I mean, unfortunately, a lot of those guys only fought once or twice this year. Inoue fought twice, but, you know, we want to see him in the States, want to see him in bigger fights. He's moving up to a whole new weight class with a whole new list of opponents. So I don't know if Inoue will be fighter. It's Ronnie's favorite fighter. So that means something. That should mean something.
He's the most electric.
He is a lot. There's no dying. Would you want to see him fight in the States?
100%.
Right. Get him out of, obviously, Japan, like, it is what it is. He fights at 6 a.m. And we talked about how much we love him. No, I do want to see him in a big fight. Love to see him in person. Like, that's like a bucket list type of thing, is to see
those
punches land. So, you know, what they sound like on TV is scary. I imagine being ringside, watching Inoue. You ever see him live, Chris?
No. I called one of his fights in the bubble. But, yeah, that was in studio.
Yeah, we got. I want to see, you know, that's on my bucket list for 2023, is seeing Inoue fight live. Quickly, most punches thrown this year, William Cepeda, 2,492. He threw 1,536 of those in one fight, which broke the lightweight record. Lightweight record. Think about that. 40 years of us keeping track of punch stats. Lightweight. One of the best divisions in all of boxing. No one is
one of the busier divisions too.
Yeah, no one's thrown more punches in a fight than William Cepeda did this year when he beat Jojo Diaz in October 29th, 1536. Most punches landed in a fight this year. Fernando Martinez, all the way back in February, he landed 427 punches. The 400 club is very rare. The 300 club is. If you break 300 punches landed in a fight, I think you've done that too, Chris. It means that you did some serious work. Fernando Martinez landed 427. He had a huge year at Superfly. Most punches landed in a round. Take a guess.
Landed
in 3 minutes this year. Most punches landed. He is a big name.
157.
I'm the fighter. And you're off by 100.
57. I was going to say 55.
Yeah, he was off by 100. My math's terrible. Ronnie was off by 101. But guess so that 56. Fighter. Who landed the most punches in a round this year? Winner gets a John Boy boxing shirt.
Devin Haney.
These days.
No, close.
No, he doesn't throw that much.
He's a little guy. He's a little king.
Bam?
No. I want him to fight Bam.
Oh, Gonzalez? Chiquito?
Yes.
Chocolatito?
Chocolatito. Oh, okay.
That makes sense. Against Estrada?
Against Julio Cesar Martinez.
Oh, okay.
His March fight. He landed 58 punches. And how about this? He did it in the 12th round, the final round. Yeah. Old man Chocolatito. Last year, he threw and landed the most punches in any fight, and he did it in 2020 as well, and he also did it in 2011, which I think is nuts. Like, 10 years apart at that weight class to still be able to have that much volume and output. But it wouldn't be a year if Roman Gonzalez didn't, like, have some type of record. 58 punches landed coming in the 12th and final round.
Dan, I got homework for you. Go pull up some of my old numbers.
I will right now. I think the Les Pierre fight, I think you definitely threw over 1,000 punches in 10 rounds.
I think I was just under, but I threw over 1,000 in the fight with Jose Peralta in 10.
Hold on. I have the database right here. This is on the fly. Let's type in Algeri, A-L-G-A-R, Chris Algeri. Les Pierre fight, you threw 910 punches in 10 rounds. That's a lot. You landed 40% of your power shots. You landed 75 body shots. Some good jabs. 40 jabs you landed. 283 total punches.
Close up to
just missed that
club.
300. If you went 12, you definitely would have landed 300.
Yeah, look at Peralta. Jose Peralta.
I'm going to go to this Coil fight. I think that was a war.
That was a war, too.
You knocked him out.
That was only 8 rounds. Yeah,
you stopped him.
Mm-hmm.
172 punches you landed in 8 rounds. 700. You threw a lot of punches. I don't know if we have that fight. You're saying, Provodnikov. That was a good one.
You definitely have it. What's his other name? It was
you outlanded Provodnikov 288-205. Oh my god, you out jabbed him. I mean, that's how you won the fight, and you landed more power shots. Like, you out jabbed him 111-41.
Yeah, he's not much of a jabber. He didn't land much. If you really watch that fight, it's not really a close fight.
Well, I got Peralta that here. February 23rd, 2013. 1,081 punches thrown in 10 rounds.
That was my record.
You averaged 100 punches thrown around.
For 10 rounds.
371 punches landed.
371?
371.
Wow. I almost made the 400 club. Shit. Did
Peralta have arms? What was he doing?
I found a lot of holes. What? Ronnie, look at the last round. Look at the last round on that one.
Last round, 48 of 135.
135 in the last round, 10th round.
I want to pull up.
I'm so proud right now.
371 punches landed. And what year was that? That was 2013, right?
13.
I'm going to 2013 to see who landed the most punches in a fight. Total punches connected. Total punches.
Ronnie, pull that fight up. It's a really fun fight. That's one of my favorite fights of mine to watch.
Fighter.
Pulling it up right now.
You were in the you're top 10 that year. You were number 6 in punches landed that year.
Punches landed.
Soto Carras landed 390, just ahead of you. Juan Francisco Estrada landed 416. Omar Figueroa 480. In the
yeah, but most... how many of those were 12 rounders?
Well, that's the thing. What was that fight? That was
not a 12
rounder.
Mine was 10 rounds.
You're sick. You're a sick man.
So 378 in 10 rounds.
Yeah. That year, Evgeny Gradovic, remember him?
Yeah. I trained with him at Robert Garcia's gym.
He landed just under 500 punches in the fight.
Wow. He was top a stud, 10. Man.
He was impressive.
He worked really hard in the gym.
All right. That is our episode. That was a fun one. I love doing these because I like to look back at the year as a whole. If you follow me on social media, you know I'm always looking ahead at what's coming up the next month and trying to keep everyone caught up. Like, if you come to my page, I like to give you an overview of what's going on in boxing. That's why I love doing these types of shows, because you can fit an entire year into a one podcast. Looking ahead to next year, do you have any bold predictions? Chris, get your crystal ball out.
Well, I think I made one of them already. Keyshawn Davis becoming a world champion. I think that's a big one.
That's a pretty big one, because a lot has to go right for him politics wise.
Yeah. But I think there's a big push for him, you know, with the political team that he has behind him. And I think he's got the skills and he's been progressing that quickly. So that's a pretty bold one.
Do you have any, do you think Spence Crawford happens next year? Yes or no?
No,
I don't think so either.
I don't think so. Especially, I think with this new information about the car accident, that's a big deal. We spoke on air about this a couple of times. Like, hey, car accidents do damage, whether they're apparent or not. And the fact that Spence has said publicly that he's had some issues, that he doesn't want to fight because of that, that's a very indicative thing. And he wants to fight again before. So I don't see it. The more time that goes and more fights that happen between, the less chance that happens. And I don't think we're going to see it next year, which means we're not going to see it ever.
I do think we get Tank versus Ryan. I think that's going to be a massive fight. I hope we're there. I do think we get that. I do think we get Fury Usyk. I think that's trending in the right division. We'll have an undisputed, the first ever undisputed heavyweight champion in the four belt era, which is kind of stupid because we don't like all those belts, but it's history and it's going to probably happen in Saudi Arabia. That would be good, right? Because the heavyweight division this year, like, barely even talked about it on the show, which is weird because it's probably the most visible division in all boxing. But the biggest fight was just one title fight, pretty much. It was Usyk and Joshua. That was the biggest title fight of the year. The only other one was Fury in these like kind of stay busy fights against White and against Chisora. So hopefully next year, the heavyweight division, some of these, we see some more fights. We see Fury fight Usyk. We see our guy Joe Joyce get in there and do his thing. Jared Anderson come up the ranks. Wilder maybe could fight Joshua. I just want to see it. Like, these guys need to cash out. This era needs to come to a close with the guys that haven't fought each other.
Well, and you know what's so upsetting about all of that is we have the talent. The heavyweight division, their talent is deep. All of those guys are studs, and they can all beat each other at any point because that's how heavyweights kind of function.
Yeah,
but We didn't get the fights this year, and that's really unfortunate. They could have easily been the best division of the year if those guys fought each other.
Right?
Yeah, that's fair. But now, especially because I think we have incredible talent, and everyone, they're all so different, right? Because Wilder He's just the one punch king. Like we love that. He's also a good talker. You know, you got Tyson Fury, who is, I mean, larger than life. He's pretty much a cartoon character who can literally beat up everybody on the planet. Anthony Joshua is like that prototypical. He's the video game version of the heavyweight champion. That's the guy that I put together to make as a heavyweight champion. And then you've got all the guys below that can actually really fight. Like you Joyce. Said, like the Joe Joyces of the world, you know? I mean, what about Ruiz? There's always Ruiz in there. He's always, you know, right around the corner to upset the apple cart. So
we're just talking about punches thrown. Andy Ruiz threw the least amount of punches in a 12-round fight this year. 287 versus Luis Ortiz.
Well, it's two guys with very, very low output numbers. Right. Yeah. So.
All right. Yep. That's the show. Good year overall. I rated a solid 7. Could have been a 9 if we would have got one of the two, Spence Crawford or Fury Joshua. Should have got Spence Crawford. I don't want that to be the end of the show, though. I don't want to just talk about that. Let's say something positive.
Well, I do think that we're going into another year with a lot of opportunity. And if nothing else, as much as boxing has let me down, it has always uplifted me. So I'm going with that. I'm ending the year as optimistic, Chris, because I'm usually Mr. Pessimism, but and that's what it's all about. It's all about winning
gold.
All about winning gold. All about taking on the championship. Yeah. And I think we're gonna see a lot of championships change hands next year. Don't do that.
Ronnie, you have any final words for 2023? 2022. What year is it? 2022.
22 was a great year. 2023 is going to be so much better.
To the moon. We have a lot of big things planned for this show. We have a lot of big things planned for our channel. Subscribe, Inside Boxing Live. Our Boxing Combine is coming out soon. We're going to be going to more fights. We're going to be covering the sport a lot more in 2023. Some big things planned. Thank you so much for tuning in all year long. Big things in 2023. As always, keep your hands up, protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs.